My name is Joan Morgan, and I am an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Pat will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Pat. I'm an alcoholic. Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Elke will read the steps.
Hi, my name is Elke, and I'm an alcoholic. The steps, the 12 steps. One, we admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn over our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics, to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Helen will read the traditions.
Alcoholic. My name is Helen. One, the 12 traditions. One, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. Is this the long form? Okay, we don't want that. Okay, one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself In our group conscience, our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups as a whole, or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group would never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service board or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Orla.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Orla, and I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't nervous until about 8 seconds ago. It is an honor to be here. First, I would like to thank Jen, who asked me to speak. My sobriety date is June 7th, 2001. My sponsor is Marita. I'm currently dragging on my 9th step, because it's probably almost over, and trying to live in 10, 11, and 12. I want to thank all my sponsees who keep me here. I'm going to try to tell you in 5 minutes what it was like, in the next 5 minutes, what it's like now. I'm the fourth child to a family that came here from Ireland. I come from a long line of people who have a problem with the drink, as they call it. Alcoholic is like really a drastic word to people in my family. All went well for a time in my family. My mom was a very strong overachiever, an active alcoholic. My dad worked. I had a sister 6 years older, and then their two brothers, and then me. The first time I had a drink, I went by this drinking cart we used to have with all sorts of shiny bottles on it, and I took a test tube thing from my mother's office. She was a scientist, and I filled it up, put it in my backpack, and said, I'm going to Annie's house, and I was 13. And just the nature of that whole thing is kind of how my alcoholism works. I drank all of it with my friend and threw up and thought it was really cool. And the first experience I had where I thought maybe something was really wrong was when I was 14, and I was out drinking with friends, and the next thing I know, I was in my bed. And I got up to go to this sort of acting camp I was doing, and I got up to cross the room, and I fell on the floor, and I had broken my toe, and I had no idea how. And instead of sort of confessing that, I just made up a story, and I spent the whole day in perfecting this story to all my teachers about how I was at a movie theater and somebody with a big cowboy boot stepped on my foot, and I mean, just fantasy, you know. And that's kind of how my alcoholism went. I think that I was born with this thing in my blood. And the moment I took a sip, it lit. And I think I knew from the time I was 14, 15, 16 that I was an alcoholic. The only way I really started to know that term was that my sister came home when I was 16 and identified my mother as an alcoholic. And she gave us a piece of paper. that listed the four types of kids in an alcoholic home, and it was the four of us in order. And it was really cool, actually, because I had always felt a little screwed up, and I thought, look, look, that's it, it's here. It says I'm the clown, and I just want to make everybody laugh, and, you know, that's what it was. We proceeded to do an intervention on my mom, who proceeded to smoke in the corner and drink and say, I know, I'm getting help. And we had had 2 weeks of therapy to deliver this information to her, and that was all we got. And I had packed her bag for her rehab, and she wanted nothing to do with that, and she was very angry. So what I did was leave home that night, and I went to my sister's place, and we drank orange juice and vodka all night and smoked cigarettes all night. And it seemed no correlation. It was just the way to cope. So I kind of went on this path of, you know, now I can see it so clearly, but I went on searching for relationships that sort of reenacted this thing of being really close to people who drank a lot, who were trying to die. And I would be right next to them and trying to die, but just a little bit less. And then I could have all my rage, and I could have all my victim, and I could have all that stuff. So I went to college and befriended a girl who was undiagnosed bulimic, manic depressive, alcoholic, and she was my best friend, and we did everything together, including going into the city, getting into a cab with a bottle of vodka and a thing of orange juice, and getting out somewhere in the village, and I don't know what else happened, then waking up in a diner, and then I don't know what else happened, and then waking up in an apartment, and things like that. I was plagued with the idea that I was going to be just like my mom. Wow, that went fast. 5 minutes. Okay. Wow, that's incredible. So here's the story. I kind of was like, I knew I had this alcoholism, but I didn't want to deal with it. I thought I could control it. I thought that I would never have to give up my right to drink, because my mother's alcoholism was like a train wreck in my family and had ruined our family. I white-knuckled a lot. I went to our sister program that saved me somewhat. And then my sister, out of nowhere, sort of, committed suicide. I was 3 months pregnant with my first son. I was not drinking, I was not smoking, I was not taking my antidepressants, and then they told me I couldn't have sugar. And I thought I was going to kill people. And I thought there was no solution. I went on to have another baby, and then out of the blue, my mother died. She was a brilliant physiologist and a biochemist, and she died because she had a pedicure that gave her an infection, and she didn't deal with it. And she finally took herself to the hospital when her feet were turning blue and her lips were turning blue. And we got a call saying there was a 1% chance of survival. So that day in the hospital, I looked at her, and I had a friend with me from Al-Anon who said she had to get to a meeting the next day. I ended up going to a meeting with her, not knowing that this was going to be the meeting. And they said, anyone counting days, and my hand went up. And I didn't ask my hand to go up. My hand went up. All I knew was there was a lot of Guinness at my house. There were a lot of Irish relatives at my house, and there was a lot of pain inside me. And I was hopeless, and I was spiritually bankrupt. And I thought that God was just trying to give me as much stuff as I could take to see how strong I was, kind of. And I have a much different reality today. I have a higher power today that I believe wants what's best for me. I believe in a higher power. Let me just tell you that when I first heard about this meeting and someone said to me, oh, you have to dress up to go to that meeting, I said, I will never go to a meeting where you have to dress up. And here I am. By following directions, by following my sponsor's guidance, by working these steps, I have undergone that psychic transformation. I do not fight. I was fighting everything and anyone, convinced that it was all bad. When I got sober, I had a 7-month-old and a 3-year-old and a marriage that was horrible. And when I left my house tonight, I looked at my 8-year-old and my 10-year-old boys, and I feel so much love. And the sober part of me, after I said goodbye to them, actually turned and said goodbye to my husband. The alcoholic in me doesn't say goodbye to anybody, doesn't say hello to anybody, doesn't... That active alcoholic is wreaking havoc, has wreaked havoc. AA has given me myself back. I never knew I had a self. I love this room, this church. I love the people that do service here. Without the service here, I know that my ego would run amok, and I'm trying to think of everything I need to say. I want to thank my Jersey crew that comes here, goes to great lengths to get here, crossing Midtown in holiday traffic. We try to come as much as we can, and we tell people all over Jersey about this group, and they say, why is it so special here? And I say, well, because we're all reading the same book, and this book has been written about all of us, and we were all almost dead, and now we're living. It's profound, thank you. It's profound to be in a room where everybody is acquainted with this book on whatever level you're on it. If this is the first time you're holding it, if you've read it 1,000 times, this is everything you need to know is in here. This whole book is written about me and about you and about the emotional twists that happen after years of drinking and years of not having a power greater than yourself. My sponsor reminded me to come here empty-handed tonight, and I was sitting there thinking, you know, I do feel pretty empty-handed. I've surrendered in terms of what I think I need to hold on to. I have no idea. I know very little. I only know that the only way this works is if I tell you what happened to me and how I got better, because then you can believe it. And it can work for you. It can work for anybody. You know, I feel like when you're asked to speak, it's kind of like a lazy Susan, and you just spin it, and then whoever's there, they tell their story, you know. We're all capable of this story. Thank you for my sobriety.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Peretz.
Hi, I'm Peretz, and I'm an alcoholic. The stats. Okay, so the Atlantic Group is my home group. James M. is my sponsor. I celebrated 5 years 2 days ago, and... thank you. And still got some 9 left, as James reminds me, and trying to live in 10 and 11 and 12. So first, the message to the sponsees, put your Blackberries away, please. I want to welcome the newcomers. I want to welcome people on the fence. I want to welcome everyone. I want to welcome my dad, who's out in the back again, back by popular demand. My father. Okay, so my sponsor reminded me today to share what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And what I was like, I was a mess. I was a big mess. You know, drinking was a huge, huge part of my life. I was thinking about while Orla was speaking. Of course, I was thinking about myself. I told her I wouldn't be listening to your qualification because I've got stuff to think about. And I assured her that most everyone's not really, paying attention anyway. So don't worry about it. I did most of my drinking. By myself. It was a lot of fun. It was fun in the beginning, going out with friends. I grew up in Brooklyn. We used to come into the city on Thursday nights. The drinking for me would start early, sometimes in the shower. But most of the time, I didn't get a license until a couple years, like after my friends. So I would be always the one in the back seat drinking. I used to tell my friends, they're like, why are you drinking? And I was like, well, the bars are expensive, so I like to save money. I'm Jewish, by the way. Bad joke. Okay. My drinking progressed really, really, really fast. Like I said, I did most of my drinking alone. I did most of my drinking in my car. Because that was like my escape. That was my escape from my ex-wife. That was my escape from Friends, family, everything. I lived in the city. I would get home from work. I would find a good spot that was that, you know, for alternate side for the next day. But I would always tell my ex-wife that I'm going out to look for a spot, and I would drive. You know, I wouldn't drive anywhere, but I'd be in the car for a couple hours, and then I knew she'd fall asleep, and I'd stay there and, you know, do my thing because it was just me, and I didn't have to listen to anyone. And that led to driving in blackouts. I would one second be in the car, next second I'm on the Long Island Expressway, you know, doing one of these deals, and I'd come home, and then I wouldn't remember where I parked my car. I'd always, you know, I'd be in the car, and the next thing I know, I'm in my bed, you know, hours and hours later. I had this thing about waking up without clothing on. I don't know where they went. This is what happened in bars a lot too. I would go into a bathroom stall. Wait, that's going to sound weird. I'd walk out. All right. But anyways, my drinking progressed, and I didn't. You know, life on life terms was just becoming too much. I couldn't deal with work. I couldn't deal with anything. And then I started. I'd wake up late. I wasn't working towards the end. My last year of drinking, I would be at the bar at 12 o'clock, and that's the afternoon. And start drinking, and then, you know, that was basically my routine, and I would sleep it off because I knew my ex-wife was coming home from work, and I didn't want her to bug me, and then I'd start again, and I would hide the alcohol, and this was just one thing, you know, day after day after day after day after day, nothing changed, and I felt like the world closing in on me, and also, I mean, most mornings I would wake up and I would be surprised that I was alive. From the amount of alcohol that I was drinking to the other stuff that I was doing, I was really surprised most days that I was getting up. 5 minutes, sweet. So what happened? I ran into a friend of mine. I had no clue about AA or anything. I didn't know there was another way. I didn't know we had a choice. I just thought that this was just going to be the way it was. You know, I figured I was 25 at the time when I first went into rehab. I didn't think before that I was going to make it to 27. I had this weird dream in my head that I would go down with like one of the greats, you know, with the ones who died at 27, Cobain, Hendrix, Morrison, Scheinerman, you know, and it was I saw it in lights. And then I come into rehab. I start to get sober, start this journey. I didn't think that like this was something that I was going to do long term. You know, my name is Peretz. It's spelled P-E-R-E-T-Z. A lot of people think I'm saying other things. Paris, you know, most non-Jews get it like screwed up and stuff like that. And so when I went to bars, I would just go by Phil. It was close enough. P, whatever. And when I first came into AA, for like the first 7 to 10 days, I would raise my hand and count days saying my name was Phil. And then it dawned on me that I might be sticking around for a little while, so I might want to go by Peretz. Anyways, but when I first came in, even though I heard all these speakers and the message of hope, and you know, there was always this little doubt in me that, well, this is not going to work for me. You know, I'm different. You know, all that crazy stuff that we all think. And so I continued just to do things my way, even though I wasn't drinking. You know, some of the steps were for me. Not really about the parts about getting honest and stuff like that. That wasn't for me. But I just continued to do the things I did when I was drinking in sobriety. And then I relapsed. And then I relapsed. And then I realized, and this would just go on and on for the first few years. So what happened? I called up James. And I told him I had this great plan in my head that I wasn't coming back. I wished him well. I thanked him for his great service. I'm going to take my crappy life back. Thank you. But anyways, I get off the phone with him, and it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, what have I been doing? What have I been thinking? And, you know, that's my problem today. I know I haven't had a drink or anything or any type of substance put in my body for over 5 years. And, you know, that's not my problem today. My problem is in my head. And I have to get that stuff out. Because if it doesn't get out, it takes on a life of its own. And I start to believe a lot of it. So I came back and I was willing. I wasn't that willing again. But you know, there were a couple things in the last 5 years that have changed my sobriety. And, you know, one of them was my mother passed away almost 3 years ago. And I promised someone tonight I was going to do that lip thing when I mentioned my mother. I don't remember who it was. Anyways, so I remember calling up James, and I remember saying to him, I go, I don't know what to do. This was like when we first got the news that she was dying. She would die like, 7 days later. And, and he said, you're doing it. And that was the most powerful thing for me to hear. You know, and it's like all of us in this room, we're doing it. We're showing up, we're doing it. And 1 minute, okay. So, message to the newcomers, besides put your phones away. Get involved. And when I say get involved, get the home group, get the sponsor, start working the steps. Stop thinking, because that's what I struggled with for years, was that I kept thinking that I was different, that this wasn't going to work for me. And just get involved and stay. And don't keep just 1 foot in, but, put 2 feet forward and just listen to your sponsor. Even though as painful as it can be, oh, my God, he's telling me all these things. And, my life is over, and I'm sober now. And, all this crazy stuff that we think, it's so not true. It's so not true. AA has given me this wonderful life with relationships, sponsees, sponsorship, service. And I'm just very grateful today. Thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is Marie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Marie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Marie. Let me just open this up and get a sip. Thank you, Bob, for asking me to share. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak at any AA meeting, but especially at my home group. This is the best home group. Just to listen to all the announcements, all the people that, are counting days, all the people that are celebrating this month, what a miracle. What a cluster of recovery. We are right in the middle of it. What a blessing. And I am so blessed that I was brought here 5 years ago. For the stats, AG is my home group. My sober date is March 23, 1988, so I have 20 years. Joan is my sponsor. Peggy is my grand sponsor. Thank you so much, Peggy, for founding this meeting. It's really changed my life. AA has changed my life, but what I've learned here has really changed my life. Just a little bit of background. I deserve a seat here. I drank a lot. I always thought, work really hard, play really hard, and I played too hard. When I was, drinking didn't really interrupt my life when I was in college, but when I got married, I started really enjoying wine. And I remember my ex-mother-in-law saying, you better be careful. You're going to become an alcoholic. And I just really enjoyed drinking. And I didn't listen to her, but that was the first time I heard that. And in my family, there really wasn't a lot of alcoholism that I noticed. But now in retrospect, Yeah. In retrospect, my mother's family, my mother was 10 of 11, and she was Irish-English, and probably 8 or 9 of them had alcohol problems. Some stopped, and some died of alcoholism. So it was in the family. Really, my first contact with the disease in myself was that I would just daydream. That was my first escape. I said I was drinking too much when I was married. We dabbled in, some of that white powder. We actually used that white powder to keep us together. And then when we split up, I guess I was married like 5 years, I really think I needed a drink to not kill myself. My hands were shaking like this without a drink. The thing was that instead of dealing with the emotional devastation of a divorce, I drowned it out in alcohol, and 6 months later I had a problem, and it was off to the races. I actually went to a rehab because the man that I was living with 2 or 3 years later, his family really wanted him to go to a rehab, so it's like, okay. And at the rehab, it was the first time I was introduced to AA and the Big Book. And, I remember someone came in to the rehab. I was counting days. But somebody came in who had 5 years and had slipped. And that was, like, amazing to me. And what he said was he stopped going to meetings and he stopped using a sponsor. That I can remember. And I just remember I wasn't ready then. I didn't want to stop drinking. I wanted to go back out and maybe not use the white stuff, but I still wanted to drink. And I remember talking to my boyfriend on the phone and saying, oh, we'll have some champagne, And it's like I was in complete denial about really the nature of the disease. But the reason I bring up going to the rehab is when I did find the rooms, it was after I had stopped using drugs, and, then I started to experience what they told me in the rehab. I didn't enjoy the drinking anymore. I was drinking for maybe 6 or 8 weeks, and I felt incredibly guilty. I felt so much remorse. It wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't a balancing act anymore. And I remember, and this for me was my, I really believe God was very instrumental in my life. I picked up the phone and I called up this man that I had been living with and I said, what am I going to do? I need you to help me, yada, yada, yada. And all of a sudden, I heard myself asking this person who I knew was, I knew this was insanity. Why was I asking him to help me? I was only going to go back to the same deplorable living conditions. And I really believe that God all of a sudden shed a little light on my brain, let me relook at what was going on and turn me around. And I went to a meeting that night, and I've been sober ever since. I got sober in South Florida. I got sober at the 101 Club. I got a sponsor immediately. I felt like I was safe and at home. So anybody who's new here, you are in such a safe place. You never have to drink again. I just felt like, kind of like I felt when I had 103 temperature and I had bronchitis and I put myself in the care of a doctor. That's how I felt when I got to AA. It's like, really, I had arrived, take care of me. And so what I was told was, 90 meetings, 90 days. Get a sponsor, get a service commitment, get phone numbers, get a network of sober friends. And that's what I did. You know, I got a sponsor. She had 17 years. I couldn't believe it. I became friends with all the women that she was sponsoring. I got a service commitment. I mean, I was shocked. I was asked to be the treasurer at this meeting. I couldn't believe that I was given that kind of a position, that I was trusted with money. It was such a blessing, and that was one of the building blocks, you know, on my road to recovery of self-esteem. And, you know, that is what I've learned in these rooms. There is a fountain of sobriety here. There's people with so many living experiences. You know, what Parrott said before, you're doing it. We are all meeting life's challenges sober, with grace and dignity. And, you know, I have sober sisters, I have sober friends, I have prayer partners, that all of you, you know, fill me with such awe at the steps you take day by day, at how you meet life's challenges. And, you know, I hold you in regard and esteem, and by watching you live your life, I'm really empowered to be a better person. I can copy what you do, and it changes the way, it changes who I am and how I behave. And of course, I always have my sponsor who can give me good, clear advice. But back to, you know, my early sobriety. I had a home group, I had a commitment, and I called my sponsor, I went through the steps, and when I got to the 11th step, I reached back to my what I had learned as a young child. I grew up as a Christian, and I kind of turned my back on God when I was like 20, 22. I said, "Thank you, God, for my body. Thank you for my brains. Now leave me alone and let me live my life." So I believed in God, but I really didn't want him to have anything to do with my life. I since really have changed. Now I have a loving God who, you know, I'm in touch with God's will for me through my contact with my sponsor, through reading the big book, through what I get in my spiritual practice, and just, you know, trying. I'm connected. I'm trying to develop a spiritual life. For me, I go to church. I'm part of a fellowship group in a church, and that's just for me. But it was when I got to my 11th step that I realized I really had to go back to a God and have a relationship with a God, because if I didn't, it seemed, you know, this program hinges on growing spiritually. And I have so many wonderful role models. I have Peggy, I have Joan, I have my mother. And, you know, I was just mentioning this to my wonderful sponsee, Pam, that I can copy everybody's spiritual practice, but in the end, it's, you know, I have to have a relationship with a God of my understanding. And that's work. That's work, like any relationship is work. But, you know, what makes AA so special is we have concrete instructions, and we have a real foundation, and we have steps that, as we go through the steps, we build our self-esteem, we're closer to a higher power, and our life has changed. It's really simple, but it's really, it's not ephemeral. It's It's very concrete. And for me, it's been much more concrete than trying to have purely a religious life. So I said that I've been sober for like 20 years. And early in my sobriety, what really became a higher power to me was a job. I really felt like I didn't have it together. I wasn't recovered until I got that piece of my life back. And I think I made it bigger. I made it a higher power. I gave it more weight than a job could ever bear. And it was very elusive for me. I couldn't get work. And I, you know, I moved back to Manhattan. I was temping for a while. And I was going to meetings, but I was becoming increasingly dissatisfied with God because he really wasn't doing it the way I would have him do it. And, you know, really I was harboring a resentment towards God. And maybe that's normal. Maybe that's part of the process. But it took me a while to get the whole work life together. And I remember thinking at about 8 years, is this all there is? Like, is this what I got sober for? What's going on here? So I had that kind of, you know, negative, bad thinking. And so for a while, I walked away. You know, I think I was going to meetings until I had like 10 or 11 years. And then for 4 or 5 years, I slipped away from the meetings. So, I mean, don't do it. Don't do that. It's such a miracle that I am back here. What I did was I got more deeply involved in my church life. But, you know, to get back to that, you know, what we have here is I'm really accountable to my sponsor. I have to check in with her on a daily basis. And when I go off the deep end, or when I tiptoe a little bit near the end, she calls me on it. And, you know, you don't really get that often outside of these rooms. And I think that's what keeps me emotionally and spiritually sober. Because my thinking was starting to get twisted when I was not here in the rooms. And blessing of blessings, I was working with someone, Jeff G., who would... You know, I knew that he lived up on 86th Street, and we worked all the way downtown, and he would get off at 60th at Bloomingdale's twice a week. And I said, you know, like, so where are you going? What are you doing? And he said, you know, after asking him that a few times, he said, you know what, I'm going to reveal my anonymity. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And it's like, oh, me too. And so he introduced me to this meeting. And, you know, I hemmed and hawed and thought, you know, I came, it was the fall of 2002, and I made a decision to come. All right, well, I'm going to wait until January and start the new year and do it right. I know, what a riot, right? Like, I am so blessed that I made it here and that I stayed here, really. But at any rate, when I got here, Jeff's ex-wife grabbed me and she said, all right, so we're going to get you a sponsor. And my original thought was, all right, well, I'm going to look around and shop for a sponsor, right? And she introduced me to Joan and it's like, no, God's in control of this. I don't need to shop for a sponsor. You know, if I shop for a sponsor, I'll be shopping forever. And I'm a really good shopper. True. So, you know, I'm so blessed that Joan is my sponsor. We went through the steps. She has, you know, she is AA in action. I've seen her go through cancer. I've seen her stand up to really difficult times. She lost her mother. And she's done it all with grace. And, you know, when we are here and we're, our eyes are open and we're sober, we get to watch how people deal. And we get to copy that and take the best of it and change the fabric of our lives and be wonderful people. We get to be the people that, you know, God would have us be, the part of ourselves that is the best part that we want to be. And so I'm really, really blessed that I have Joan in my life. She had me go through the steps, as I said. She, you know, there's never enough meetings for Joan. You know, three is not enough. It's like what Joan will say is, you know, the longer you're sober, the more vulnerable you really are. And it's really important that we be here and hear and see what the newcomer is doing, because there but for the great, you know, as my grand sponsor says, it's like the natural state for an alcoholic is to be drinking. And so we're all miracles, but to keep this, we've got to be here. So Joan has me doing service. You know, I signed up for a service commitment for next year, sponsoring women. And, you know, calling her every day. It's important that you be sponsored by someone who has a sponsor, and she has a sponsor. And it's very important for me that we follow Peggy's credo. We absolutely insist on having fun. And, I mean, you heard about all the festivities that we have. This is a wonderful time of the year. And I think a few times, Bob, didn't we do caroling together? Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. And I can't wait to do that this year. You know, we are just truly blessed to be here. This is a wonderful way of life. I've gone all around, well, I haven't gone all around the world, but I've seen a lot of the world, and I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I never thought I would have the career that I have. I never thought anybody, would ask me to talk for a half an hour. You know, that's a miracle. But, you know, I have wonderful friends here. I have a way of life. You know, I don't have everything I want, but I have so much more than I ever thought I would have. And I know peace more than I ever thought that I would know peace. I still get the bedevilments. I get worried about things. But, you know, one of the blessings for me about being sober, the longer that I'm sober, is I more quickly realize that, that's your thinking again. You don't have to believe that. Shut it up. I mean, it took me about 10, 12 years before I realized that what was going on in my head wasn't really the truth. So that has been a big blessing for me. So how am I doing on time? 10 minutes. Oh. Let's see. I should share about the prayer wheel. That's how I start my day 5 days a week. Either I call or my prayer partner calls me. And, you know, we pray together. And that way God is part of my life from, you know, from when I'm setting my day. It's really easy for me to get distracted and think that I'm in control. But if I start my day with God, that's a big plus. We read from the 24-hour day book. So we read program material, and we say a 10-step prayer, an 11-step prayer, the Our Father, and we pray for our resentments. And it's a really good way for me to start the day and remember that I'm an alcoholic and, you know, I've got to stay close to God. I do call my sponsor during the day. I usually get her. Sometimes I get her machine. You know, another real blessing for me is the recognition that I can start my day over at any time. Sometimes I'm in a funk. Sometimes I, like, have backed myself in a corner. I have a bad attitude. But I don't have to follow that. I can, you know, sobriety says that I can see where I am. I can see how I'm acting. I can quickly do a 10th step. Or I can just quickly stop what I'm doing and start behaving the way I really want to be and be the woman that I really want to be and that I like. It's so special that I like myself now. I didn't like myself when I got here. In fact, the reason that I drank was because I didn't like myself. And then when I stopped drinking, I was just a nut because what I didn't like was so out there. The drinking kind of drowned that out. So for the newcomer that's here, you are so blessed. You're so lucky to be here. I hope that what I've shared or what Peretz or Orlitz shared has made a difference to you. And if it hasn't, just keep coming back because sooner or later you'll hear something that will resonate in your heart and you'll know you're in the right place. But for now, you know, trust that if you got here, you probably should be here and give it a chance. I was told, you know, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. If it's not right for you, you can always have your misery back. But, you know, in 90 days, your head clears up a little bit, and then you can recommit to another 90 days. This is a wonderful time of year. I'm so excited. And then, you know, we have these wonderful festivities and celebrations, and then we have a new year where we can, you know, make new commitments to ourselves, what we want in our lives and the changes that we're going to make. And I've, for the second half of this year, was doing the Big Book Study on Wednesday night, which is a wonderful meeting. But I urge anybody who hasn't gone to the Thursday night meeting, which is the beginner's meeting, to check that out, because there we go around and everyone shares who their sponsor is, what step they're working on, and their sobriety date. Because tonight we heard all the people that are counting days, but at that meeting you hear all the people that have 5 years and 10 years and 15 years, and you see that, wow, this really works, because, yeah, the newcomer has to see that. I think when you look in this room, you realize it must work because we have 300 people here, but in the smaller meeting, you actually see and hear from people who have the 15 and the 20 years or the 5 years and the 3 years. I know when I first came, I thought my sponsor had 17 years. I couldn't believe anybody would have that much time. But, you know, I mean, we have people in this meeting who have 40 years. So this program really works a day at a time, and what you do doesn't really change. It's every day. You know, you have contact with your higher power. You call your sponsor. You have a service commitment. You show up. And as my sponsor would say, you chop wood. So thanks.